Shabbat Shalom. It is early, far too early, to distill the lyrical worldview of Tom Petty into a single statement. The shock of Tom Petty's untimely passing last week at the age of 66 has sent ripples of sorrow through all those raised on his music in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, all the more so products of Southern California like myself, capable of locating themselves geographically and spiritually, gliding down over Mulholland or moving west down Ventura Boulevard. Petty's 40-year career was productive throughout 10 albums released between 76 and 99, playing sold-out arenas right up until days before his passing, a musical influence on Sam Smith, Norah Jones, John Mayer, and an ever-growing number of artists. Different from the blue-collar anthems of Springsteen or the socially conscious hymns of U2, Petty's songs are remarkable not so much because they reflect any one particular class, context, or cause. For the most part, they're not situated in any framework. The resonance of Petty's songs is that they speak to a courageous and ongoing struggle against adversity. The repeated attempt of the protagonists of Petty's songs to pick themselves up after having fallen down. From the 1970s, a newly relevant call not to live like a refugee, to the 1980s, I Won't Back Down, written in response to an arsonist, to his inspired 1990s reflection that despite having no wings, he was nevertheless learning to fly, the connective thread is there for all to hear. A sustained effort by way of his lyrics and guitar, giving voice to the efforts of an individual, sometimes successful and sometimes not, to transcend the adverse circumstances thrust upon them. And as the wonders of Spotify have enabled me to re-engage with his music this past week, and I've read about his embattled life story from an abusive childhood to lifelong struggles with substance abuse, it's understandable why it's this gritty resilience to which Petty's music kept returning. A decades-long statement that in a world that keeps on pushing me around, not only must one stand one's ground, not only must one not back down, but one must prove to be ever capable of beginning again stronger than before. If I had to situate Petty's courageous plea for resilience beyond the canon of rock and roll and into the canon of human Hebrew prayer, it would be by way of the three words, Chadesh Yamenu Kekedem, that we sang just a moment ago as we returned the Torah to the Ark. While we may be familiar with the words, it was only by way of an inspired insight by a colleague and friend of mine, Rabbi Robert Scheinberg, that they took on a new and amplified meaning. Rabbi Scheinberg notes that the choice of the passage, the final verse from the Book of Lamentations, is significant in that it asks God to renew our days kekedem. Far more sensible, Scheinberg suggests, would have been for the text to ask God to renew our days not as kedem, but as Eden, Eden, Chadesh Yamenu Ke'eden, the very beginning, the primordial Gan Eden, when everything was perfect. In fact, when Adam and Eve were cast out of the garden, it was to Kedem LeGan Eden, translated by Steinbeck and others as East of Eden, to which they were stationed. So why, Rabbi Scheinberg asks, would we ask God to return us to Kedem, the place where Adam and Eve were sent after their sin, and not to the more pristine pre-fruit-eating place of Eden? Wouldn't we all choose to return to Eden if we could? Thankfully, Rabbi Scheinberg answers his question as follows. As Jews, it's not to the perfection of Eden to which we aspire. Perfection is not ours to have. Our hope, rather, is to return to the more accessible and far more inspiring place where Adam and Eve were called on not to begin, but having been caught, castigated, and cast out, to begin again. It is to that new beginning, that place of resilience and renewal following a setback, to which we turn for inspiration and as Jews ask to be returned. Rabbi Sheinberg's insight is significant in that, unlike other faith traditions, as Jews, our focus is directed not so much on any sin Adam and Eve committed in the garden, but rather on their ability to reconstitute their lives following their brief stay in the garden. Our attention is directed to the story of how the first couple, having grown distant from God, learn to grow close to each other. A story of how two people, made painfully aware of the limitations of their own mortality, learn to extend the reach of their existence by way of bringing children into this world. A story of how the human heart, now capable of differentiating between good and evil and thus feeling shame and guilt, nevertheless learns to navigate this world, seeking to choose good. Adam and Eve may have indeed been created in the garden, but for Jews, the real story begins once they've left, when they demonstrate that resilience and courage to begin life anew. As Elie Wiesel famously wrote, according to Jewish tradition, creation did not end with man, it began with him. When he created man, God gave him a secret, and that secret was not how to begin, but how to begin again. To begin again, if you allow it to be, it is a powerful way to reframe not just the first few chapters of creation, but the entire book of Genesis, if not the entire biblical tradition. Our stories, the stories that animate and inspire our people, upon closer examination, are not so much stories about beginnings, but rather new beginnings. Stories about how individuals, families, and sometimes an entire nation, following a loss or a setback, prove able to carve a path forward. Consider Noah, who next week will plant a vineyard following the devastating destruction wrought by the flood. Or Abraham and Sarah, whose journey to Canaan is preceded by the death of Abraham's father and a lifelong battle with infertility. Isaac, whose singular task was to make sense of this world, having been nearly sacrificed on the altar. Jacob, who upon fleeing his brother Esau and his household of origin, sought to rebuild his life in a new land on new terms. Joseph, who having been thrown into a pit and sold into slavery by his brothers, eventually rises up to save himself and his adopted homeland of Egypt, as well as, not to mention, the very brothers who threw him in the pit in the first place. Our heroes are heroes not because they were chosen by God or happenstance inheritors of birthright. The lives of Cain, King Saul, amongst others, were tragic because when faced with adversity, they did not prove resilient enough to begin anew. Our heroes are those people who, like Miriam with her timbrel, as she crossed the sea into freedom, chose not to languish in the hurts of the past, but found the strength to transcend their suffering toward seizing a brighter, better future. The question of today is not how to begin, but rather how to begin again. The rabbis teach that it wasn't just humanity, but even God, God's self, who had to learn to regroup and begin anew following failure. Not one, not two, but 1,000 worlds, the Midrash explains, God created and destroyed before settling on the one in which we presently live. And even then, as we're all aware, it's not without its flaws. And if it's incumbent upon God to cultivate resilience, how much more so we must all learn to rebound from life's setbacks. From our biblical forebears, to the prophet Jeremiah's command to rebuilding following exile, to the rebuilding of Jewish life following the destruction of the temple, to the establishment of the state of Israel in the wake of the Shoah, this is the fundamental DNA of our people. Not an answer as to why pain occurs, for that's a question whose answer will ever elude us. Rather, the knowledge that in the face of pain, we must answer with a commitment to life. It's a quality that the author Nassim Taleb calls anti-fragility, loosely defined as the ability of certain people to thrive and grow when exposed to stress and uncertainty. The counterintuitive thought that the challenges of life can, if we so choose, result in post-traumatic growth. Not that we believe there's a silver lining to be had in every setback. Most all of us, I imagine, if given the choice of experience suffering and the wisdom that comes with it, or no suffering and thus no wisdom, would choose the latter over the former any day. Rather, it's a matter of asking ourselves whether, given the inevitability of setbacks and pain, will we nevertheless have the wherewithal to draw on the very resilience that has characterized our people from the very beginnings. Every Shabbat and every Parsha is, in my mind, special. But there's something about today, Shabbat Bereishit, that's extra elevated. It is, after all, the first Shabbat of the year. The holidays have just concluded, our New Year's resolutions hopefully still intact, and the script for the year to come yet to be written. Here in our community, we're even dedicating a new building tomorrow. But here's the thing. I know, as do all of you, even without me saying it, that there will be setbacks, missteps, loss, and perhaps even suffering in the year to come. Some will be inflicted upon us without cause or explanation, and some might be wrought by our own hand. We will fall short of others, of God, and perhaps of ourselves. So no matter how clean our slates may be right now, rest assured that they will not stay that way forever. So today, let's be prepared for the inevitable. When we do slip, when we fall, and yes, even when we suffer, let us not seek to return to Eden. None of us can turn back the clock. Rather, may we return to that place just a bit east of Eden, Kedem LeGan Eden, where Adam and Eve once stood, seeking to make sense of their world, and endeavor, as they did, to dust themselves off, pick themselves up, a bit wiser, a bit stronger, journeying forward, one step after the other, into the great wide open. Shabbat Shalom.